Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
A new fund now allows retail investors to get in on some of the hottest tech startups, including Stripe, OpenAI, and SpaceX. But of course, it comes with some risk. Kate Rooney digs into that for today's Tech Check. Hi, Kate. Tell us more about this.
Hey, Corey. Yeah, so this is pretty rare. Typically, investing in private startups is reserved for high net worth individuals. But a new fund that launched 2 weeks ago is shaking that up. There is certainly demand for it. Destiny Tech 100, as it's called, is up 500% since it debuted, but tanking about 40% today, which could be related to reports that the CEO has sold nearly $5 million worth of shares. It is a unique structure, not a stock, not an ETF. This is a closed-end fund. It holds a portfolio of 23 pre-IPO private companies with an annual fee of 2.5%, so more akin to a mutual fund. This fund comprises some of the most valuable private companies out there. You got Elon Musk, SpaceX, one of the largest holdings, followed by Axiom Space, Epic Games, OpenAI, and Stripe. One dynamic at play here, Silicon Valley companies are staying private for longer. Stripe, for instance, has been private and privately held for 14 years now, SpaceX more than 20 years. These early startup employees, though, those that work at these companies, they might be wealthy on paper. Reality is, though, without an IPO, it can be hard to cash out, pay for things like a mortgage or buy a car, for example. As a result, these companies are increasingly turning to tender offers, which let employees sell those shares to others in the private markets. It's one way that this Destiny Fund was able to get in. The fund is also buying shares through forward contracts, which let employees agree to transfer some of those shares if and when their company goes public. Average investors, they've been historically locked out of some of these deals. Private markets are reserved for accredited investors with a net worth typically above $1 million, those who are considered more financially savvy, at least by the SEC. But even then, they might face a high minimum to invest. Startups can be picky about who they want on their cap table. You're not always guaranteed a look at these names. And of course, one of the main reasons these deals are out of reach is because of the risk. The venture capital model is all about high risk, high reward. They expect typically 9 out of 10 startups to fail. The one that works, that might be a home run. That always pays off for these VCs. They're looking for that one winner. It's known as the power law, but a lot of risk there. Recent IPOs of similar companies in that fund, they have not given a lot of confidence for those maybe looking for a public debut. You got Reddit and Instacart both trading below their last private valuations, guys.
I was just thinking to that very point, this is kind of interesting timing for all of this because of these recent tech companies that haven't done super great.
Yeah, you wonder if that is sort of a warning, and that could increase some of the funds like this that we're seeing that give exposure to private companies. If that's the new norm, if people and companies are not looking to go public at the same rate that they were in previous years, if there's more private funding available, you might see some of these secondary funds coming up and becoming more popular. There's clearly retail demand, but it seems like it's trading like one of those meme stocks. Mm. Anything related, you know, to Elon Musk, you see SpaceX in the name, you can see a world in which a lot of the retail investors are looking to get a slice of this. But the risk out there is massive. And it's just such a volatile stock, even in the last 2 weeks that it's been trading.
But well, what we learned from that meme craze is I guess some of those retail investors do have a pretty high appetite for risk, more so than I do. But, you know, hey, that's what makes
you do you.
Yeah, exactly. You do you. Thank you so much, Kate.
Intel's taking aim at NVIDIA and AMD's AI chips by introducing its Gaudi 3 AI chip, which they claim is better at inferencing, is better at power efficiency than NVIDIA's H100 chip, which is the main chip choice among companies building AI systems and that chip that we've been talking about for the last year or so. But Intel's Gaudi 3 provides open-based software and industry-standard Ethernet network. That's what Pat Gelsinger you're seeing on your screen right now. He just mentioned maybe about an hour and a half ago. And it's going to be available through original equipment manufacturers such as Dell, HPE, Lenovo, Supermicron in Q2 of this year. Intel, though, promising it's going to be at a fraction of the cost compared to other competitors. I just asked Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger about the cost on a media call that ended maybe about 20 minutes ago, and he told me that it was, quote, not a little below, but a lot below NVIDIA's offering. They're not giving actual pricing just yet, but all of these stats are pretty compelling. But Intel still has a lot of software and ecosystem work to push out NVIDIA, especially according to analysts, when NVIDIA controls 80% of the AI chip market. And Intel, we got to point out, is comparing itself to NVIDIA's chip already on the market, the H100. And this quarter, NVIDIA launched an updated H200 GPU graphic processing chip and has its next generation Blackwell chip shipping either in Q4 of this year or Q1 of 2025. Intel says they can't compare themselves to those upcoming chips because they haven't come to market just yet. Intel shares, though, down 15% just in the last month or so, down 12% last week after the company announced its foundry business lost billions and is going to continue to do so this year. So that's why Intel is placing a lot on these new AI chips and said that the AI PC as well will be, quote, the star of the show for the upcoming year. But let's see if it can turn things around for the company.
So, Christina, you kind of mentioned this. NVIDIA is more than just the hardware, right? It's this ecosystem that includes the CUDA software that it's developed. So even if Intel comes out with a so-called AI chip, it still has such a long way to go, right? Is this really going to hit on NVIDIA's dominance?
It will on the price point because it's priced out so many smaller companies that want to get their hands on AI accelerators. But to your point, NVIDIA has the lead with CUDA. That's the software that a lot of developers use, most developers use. And so what Intel is trying to do is make it more open source. They even launched a foundation about 7 months ago. They got a few companies on board, about seven various companies, saying that they want to push forward and that the software provided for these chips should be open, meaning developers can go and change the code and maneuver it to the way they want. Whereas when you use NVIDIA's chips, you have to use the CUDA software. So that's a little bit of a difference. So yeah, to your point, NVIDIA does have the ecosystem, but the price point is a major selling point. We can't discount it, especially when companies realize that they may not have the return and the revenue monetization when they're spending so much on their AI systems right now. But we will only see that outcome, in a year or two?
All right, Christina, thanks very much. Christina Partsinevelis. For more on Intel's new AI chip and how it impacts the other key players in the industry, like NVIDIA and AMD, let's bring in Matt Bryson, Senior Vice President of Research at Wedbush Securities. Matt, welcome. Good to have you with us. Is this chip from Intel a game changer either for Intel or for the sector?
I don't think so. This is the third iteration of this chip. And when you think about where NVIDIA is getting all of its business, it's not through, for the most part, the OEMs that were mentioned by Intel when they talked about where the chip was going to get sold. Rather, you've had NVIDIA tell us that 50% of their businesses, the cloud service providers, they've mentioned before that social media is a major end market. All of those buyers are buying through ODMs for the most part. I would suggest that 80% plus of NVIDIA's business is those large type customers that Intel doesn't have yet.
Right. This feels like it's more about Intel than it is NVIDIA, Matt. And I just wonder if you think that Pat Gelsinger is trying to bite off too much. He's trying to create a foundry business essentially from scratch. And he's also trying to keep up with some of the other big players in AI at this point. Can you do it all?
I think it's really hard to do it all. Now, having said that, for Intel, I think the most important piece to get right is the fab piece. If you can get the fab piece right, you can get your costs down. You can compete in your core markets, which are PCs and standard compute for servers. And then I think you have an opportunity to go after AI. And Intel does have a larger architectural shift ahead. They have a product called Falcon Shores coming out in 2025. And I think for Intel, if they're going to make it in AI, it's probably that product that makes it or breaks it for them.
It's in such a tricky position because it's trying to keep up with AMD and NVIDIA on one hand, but its current business is also being disrupted by some of its biggest customers, right? The mega cap customers. So how does that all shake out? And is that acceleration on the one hand enough to make up for the decline that it's seeing in its more traditional chips?
I think it really comes down to whether they can succeed in foundry and in their fab business. If they can get their fabs right, to some extent, they can be the fab for the new Google chip. They could be the fab for Amazon products. And
Well, can it, though? Because you've got TSMC and Samsung developing here as well. Why would a company choose to work with Intel when it's so new to this business?
It all depends on how you execute, right? So whoever has the best fabs will win that business. And I think it will take time for Intel to get things right, if they get things right. But then also in their core businesses. So if I'm thinking about developing my own PC chip a la Apple, I may not be able to compete with Intel on price if they have a good fab, or if they have a good fab behind their own chip, because they'll be able to get that chip at cost. And so again, I think it all comes down to Intel's work on the fab side, and I think it's still a kind of TBD to figure out whether or not they've gotten things right there.
Is the idea here, and Christina sort of hinted at it, is the idea that Intel is going to be, to the extent that it competes in these areas, that it is going to compete as the low price provider here? And that's a tough place to make money.
I don't think Intel's goal at the end of the day is to be the low price provider per se. I think their goal at the end of the day is to be both the best fab and the best chip design company. I think in the AI space, NVIDIA has such premiums that you can come in well below NVIDIA's numbers and still make money. And so I think for Intel, if you can't compete with CUDA, and you don't necessarily have those large customers buying into your solution, there's only so many levers you can pull on price as well.
Yeah, Matt, help me understand the pricing side of this, because I talked to a lot of startups that are trying to take on NVIDIA in San Francisco, produce a more efficient, cheaper priced chip, but they're not gaining traction. So why is it that companies would rather pay more for an Intel? Is it because of the compute power and everything that it provides? Why aren't these lower priced chips, many of which are already on the market, gaining any traction?
Yeah, so I mean, I think people have gotten traction in niches, like Cerebras, for instance, has some revenue. Obviously, AMD's getting some traction, but you're absolutely right that NVIDIA has been able to maintain control of the bulk of the market, and I think a lot of it comes down to CUDA. In creating this ecosystem. And then not only creating the ecosystem, but supporting it. So giving universities access to it, creating a whole subset of people within the AI workforce who understand CUDA. I think that NVIDIA has created quite a trench, and it's going to take a lot to kind of push them off their position as king of the hill.
Yep. Keyword being ecosystem. That's what they've created. Matt Bryson, thank you very much for those insights. Meanwhile, Google, it is a tough race. Google has just announced its own custom in-house chips. And the proposition here comes down to compute power, costs, and scarcity, a lot of what we were talking about. Google, though, is on both sides of this Gen AI race. The company itself is developing models and applications, but as a cloud provider, it also needs to provide compute power to its cloud customers. So AI resources, for which high-end chips are critical, has to be rationed in some way or another, or it needs to be brought in-house to reduce reliance on those outside vendors like an NVIDIA. The move also lets Google compete with chip makers like AMD and Intel. As we saw Intel's new Gaudi 3 chips, the chip wars, they are indeed heating up. And now Google can also position itself as a potential chip provider for cloud customers to rely on for AI workloads. So that is what Google and its mega cap rivals are doing. Axion is Google's latest expansion into custom chips, which the company says is capable of a range of tasks from powering Google's search engine to AI-related work. The success of Google's custom chips so far, it has been mixed. Gen AI darlings like Character.ai and Anthropic, they have used Google TPUs, but it isn't the full hardware-software stack that NVIDIA, as we were just talking about, has built, and which has helped it retain its dominance. And that is
ecosystem,
really key.
That ecosystem that they have.
Exactly. And you've got Google, right? It already has this cloud infrastructure. It's the number three player in terms of hyperscalers. You've got AWS, you've got Microsoft's Azure, and then you've got Google. This is a real opportunity here, actually, for Google to gain some ground if they have the right tools. And it's all, I'm told, about openness and choice. Mm-hmm. So any enterprise that wants to develop their new Gen AI offerings, They want to go to the cloud provider that has the Anthropic, the ChatGPT, the many, many other models.
And so it's a coming battle between these three giants, really.
Yeah, and that's why you see it at all of these cloud events, right? You see it at AWS and Google Cloud Next is going on right now. They're all touting all these tools and all of their partners and all the customers sort of that are using their cloud infrastructure. So it feels like kind of a new battle. First it was over infrastructure, then it was over apps, and now it's over Gen AI. Tools.
Yeah, how it's changed. Yeah, the evolution of it is fascinating to watch.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.